My name is Hernan Rosenberg. Some of you might have heard me on the radio. Senior correspondent for the Fronteras Changing America Desk Network. Now, I know that folks might have heard those names, that name being bantered about, but they're not quite sure what it might be. Essentially, in a nutshell, Fronteras is a CPB-funded project encompassing seven NPR stations across the Southwest. Each one of them has a senior correspondent covering the geographical area. I'm the one based here in San Antonio, and each one is based at the local station and try and provide enhanced coverage of primarily immigration, border, and demographic change issues. So that's just a little about me. This evening, we have what should be a great discussion on immigration reform, particularly the DREAM Act that people may have heard about. And I'll get Marisol here on my left to talk about the details in a second. I'd like to take a quick moment to introduce our panel. Thank you, everybody, for making the time to come and share your perspectives. On my far right here, I have Carolina Canizales. Carolina is 21 years old. She has been in the United States since she was nine after moving here from her native Monterrey, Mexico. She says she had no idea she was in the country illegally until she was in high school looking into applying for scholarships for college. She's now a senior at the University of Texas at San Antonio, majoring in communications. She has been active on the DREAM Act issue on campus, where she's currently the coordinator of the UTSA San Antonio Youth Immigrant Movement. On my near right here, I have Skylar Christ. Skylar is a longtime conservative activist in San Antonio, taking up causes ranging the gamut from abortion to immigration. On this latest subject, Skylar was a key player in helping organize local rallies and protests. One of those here in San Antonio attracted national attention, calling for the resignation of former U.S. Attorney John Sutton over the controversial conviction of two Border Patrol agents. Some of you might remember what happened there. Some of the organizations Skylar has been involved with include the former Minutemen Civil Defense Corps and U.S. Border Watch. He's now finishing a degree in criminal justice through the online program at Liberty University. His goal is to become a chaplain for a police department or correctional facility. Thank you both for coming. On my near left here, I have Marisol Perez. Marisol is originally from San Angelo, but has made her mark here in San Antonio. She attended UTSA and obtained a law degree from St. Mary's University. She began practicing law in 2001 at the Mott, McChesney, Cartwright, and Armendariz, currently San Antonio's largest immigration law firm. She left the firm in 2004 for a staff attorney position in the Southwest Regional Office, which is located here in San Antonio, of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, where she handled numerous immigration cases with national resonance, such as the Farmers Branch case. Marisol rejoined her original firm last year. On my near left here, I have George Rodriguez. George was born in Laredo, but was raised here in San Antonio. He obtained a political science degree from Brigham Young University and various certificates afterward. But he got into politics quickly, shifting from his early leftist leanings. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that, George. Toward the conservative aisle. He worked on the presidential campaign for Ronald Reagan and then joined his administration, holding various posts, including special assistant to the commissioner of the now-defunct INS. George is currently the president of the San Antonio Tea Party, and he's believed to be the first Hispanic leader of a major city Tea Party organization in the country. On my far left, I have retired Lieutenant General Ricardo S. Sanchez. Lieutenant General Sanchez is a South Texan through and through. He's a native of the Rio Grande Valley and currently lives here in San Antonio. He's got a 33-year history with the U.S. Army, having served in numerous posts and assignments. You probably know him best from his role as commander of U.S. and allied forces in Iraq in 2003 and 2004. Lieutenant General Sanchez holds a bachelor's degree in mathematics and history from Texas A&I University and a master's in operations research and systems analysis engineering from the Naval Postgraduate School. Thanks a lot for coming. What I'm going to do now is open the floor for our speakers. Each will speak for about 5 minutes on their views and analysis of the DREAM Act. And after that, we're going to open up to some questions and answers. If I can start, please, with Carolina. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate your time. And here I go. My name, as Hernan says, I'm Carolina Canizales, and I've been here since I was 9 years old. I'm currently a senior in the University of Texas, San Antonio. I just wanted to say a little bit more about my involvement. I am an honors student, so I do love to be competitive, and I think that's an important point next in my speech. I'm currently president of three organizations. I represent my university as a UTSA ambassador, and I have an unpaid internship right now with an online newspaper called El Universal. My career goal is to become a journalist and or editor for a recognized magazine. I was brought here by my mother, and I do appreciate her sacrifices and everything that she has done for me. However, I do not support the view of us dreamers being victimized anymore. So since I attended Alamo Heights High School, which is a very prestigious public school, I've been learning how to embrace American culture, and I really love being here, which the country that I call my home. The reason that I decided to be involved in my community and the DREAM Act issue and coming out, it's because as I grew up in Alamo Heights, I kind of became aware of ESL students not having all the resources available for them to succeed, as in we weren't provided with ESL bilingual teachers. We were just kind of being left behind in our classes and whatnot. So I really, at a very young age, became an advocate of my school and actually got some bilingual teachers in the program to help us understand what was going on, what our requirements were to graduate, and hopefully encourage them to apply for college, which is the next step after high school. I graduated in the top 10% of my class. I went through a struggle to actually apply for college. First of all, I was very insecure whether I wanted to, you know, apply or not. Was it going to be worth it? Was it not going to be worth it? Finally, I decided to do it. I was accepted into five major universities, including University of Boston, Trinity, Incarnate Word, UTSA, of course. I ended up going to Incarnate Word my first year, but I couldn't continue because of lack of resources. But I did not give up, which is the mentality that they built for me at Alamo Heights. Never give up. Always be a strong competitor because you can do it. I finally decided to attend University of Texas at San Antonio, where I've been very successful, and I appreciate all the help that has been provided to me. I decided to come out basically because not only was I aware of all the needs for the student community and also for my own community, which I call San Antonio. They're not just dreamers, but there's a lot of students who cannot afford college, and I wanted to fix it. I was, you know, I was tired of falling into the cracks of a broken education system, of a broken, you know, health system, of a broken immigration system just for myself. Therefore, I decided, you know, to become more involved, and now I'm a representative of the San Antonio Immigrant Youth Movement, which is led, and it's for the undocumented youth, but we also do a lot of work with our community. An example of that is this weekend we are going to participate in the Citizenship Drive, and that is just one of many examples that we have been able to show how we want our community to be involved with this. We want them to vote. We don't want them to favor us, but we do want them to vote. I mean, so it's just like very small positive aspects that I can say about the kind of work that my organization currently does. Every dreamer, I believe, has a great story to tell. Mine is, I mean, very, very small to some others that have been able to achieve way more than I have. But I do believe we are a very consolidated group and that we do benefit the society as a whole if you break it into parts and then put it together. I think we do have more benefits than we will damage this society. We're educated, we're skilled, we can be multilingual, we have multicultural backgrounds, and we're individuals who can really compete in a global economy, global culture, which is what we see nowadays. And most importantly, I think we as a group, and me, myself, I am very ready to give back to my home, which is the United States of America, I'm ready to give back to my community. And I continue to struggle and fight, and not just fighting for the DREAM Act, you know, but also since this is also an immigration panel, I'm actually also for, you know, the underrepresented communities. I do take into account all of that. It's not very center on the DREAM Act, but just kind of like bring it together and what everyone needs. Also, if you want to take into account that lots of Dreamers are qualified for the armed forces and they actually want to serve our country, you know, in the wars, defend it. And we also have lots of support. Very quick example, focus group did a poll last year when the DREAM Act was being held or, like, trying to go to the vote. And as of 2010, 70% of the Americans supported the DREAM Act. I think that's very, very important to always remember. And it still does have strong support. So,
thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I did want to say, you know, as somebody that's been covering the immigration issue for over 10 years, it's very fascinating to see, you know, no matter where you stand on the issue, on you know, undocumented students actually coming out in the public. You know, 10 years ago when I first began covering this, you would have never dreamed of even seeing that, you know, never mind trying to get one for an interview. So it is interesting to see the frustration over the, you know, impasse in Washington over this issue, no matter where you stand on it. Anyways, we'll go now to Skylar. Thank you, Skylar. Well,
my name is Skylar Chris, and as Hernan has said, I have been a longtime conservative activist on a variety of issues, but one of those issues is the immigration issue. I am definitely in opposition to the DREAM Act, primarily for reasons of both a faith-based and an economic perspective. You know, I understand people wanting to make a better life for themselves. I truly understand that. However, we have all been bitten by the economy this time around, and it's only getting worse. And right now, as it stands, according to the Center for Immigration Studies, a report written by Stephen Camerata, we have a total cost of $6.2 billion a year, not including other forms of financial assistance that illegals may receive under this act if it goes through. We cannot sustain throwing $6.2 billion towards people who are not citizens of this country. If you're not a citizen of this country, you are in essence taking money from citizens. And in effect, that not only makes you a criminal by breaking into our nation, but it makes you a robber. It makes you a thief. No question. A thief is someone who takes from anybody, whether you be American, whether you be Polish, whether you be Mexican. If somebody steals from you, what do you call them? A thief. And the minute you break into a nation and you steal our money, you're being a thief. Further, it is susceptible, this DREAM Act is susceptible to fraud. We know that in 1986, when Reagan did his amnesty bill, and he cited as one of the greatest conservatives this country has ever seen. He allowed amnesty based on trusting the Democratic leadership that they would reform the system. As a result of that amnesty, over 25% of those legalized under that act received amnesty fraudulently. That's according to the National Review in an article written by Mark Krikorian. And one of those people that received that fraudulent amnesty was Mahmoud Abahalima. He was a leader of the first World Trade Center attack in 1993. That is because we allowed amnesty. That is because we allowed lawbreakers free rides. We cannot sustain security in this country, which every American citizen has a right and an obligation to perform, if we allow amnesty for people when we can't even get the facts right on who they are, where they're going, and what their real intentions are. Thank you. I'll yield the rest of my time.
Okay. Scott, and I regret to say that I probably should have started with Marisol. I'm sorry about that, Marisol. So we'll go back to Marisol now, because some of you might be aware of what the DREAM Act is or what it has or its history, but might not know the details of it. So I'm going to have Marisol Perez, who's been tracking immigration laws and legislation for quite a while, to give us kind of a little bit of quick primer on what it is. Thanks, Marisol.
So I'm going to provide a little context, which I'm sure many of you are educated on these issues and have been over the last years. But the DREAM Act was originally proposed in 2001, and it was proposed, I think, because there was a real recognition that there was a certain population in this country that were flourishing, that had been here for many years, and were brought to this country at a very young age and had no other home other than the United States, or they recognized no other place other than the United States. It was originally proposed and has had, you know, several variations over the last 10 years, and it has been out there as a legislative piece for 10 years. And it was to provide students and the youth in this country with a mechanism to seek residency on a very methodical path. And all the variations have kind of proposed certain aspects of what the DREAM Act would confer on them. They would have to meet certain statutory requirements, which, as an immigration lawyer, I can attest to every single day that we simply are not providing immigration benefits to every individual in this country. There's other immigration lawyers here that can attest. It's a very difficult process, and statutory waivers and admissibility issues. And the DREAM Act is very similar in that you have to meet certain requirements, establish of good moral character, that you graduated from a high school, that you've enrolled in a college or institution. And it's conditional in that for a time period, you must establish that you merit permanent residency at some point in the future, that you've complied with the terms and agreements with the statute that's, you know, been proposed or in the future and that's been passed, and that you've met all the requirements. Otherwise, your residency would be revoked. So it's conditional in the sense that there are certain requirements that would be put in place that you would have to fulfill before you've acquired permanent residency. And it's a long time period, and the bill has been complex over many years. In terms of the political landscape, just to kind of talk about it, and I'm sure I don't have to, it's pretty obvious at this point, but it was originally supported and it had wide bipartisan support in 2001. And actually, when I was doing policy work several years ago, many of us would go around saying the DREAM Act just hasn't had its day. It just hasn't been a priority. We're focusing on other issues, which are fine. But when it does have its day, the support is wide, it's bipartisan, and it makes sense because we are dealing with a population that came over here very young. I meet students every day that have come on the backs of their parents, you know, through the river, and not knowing until they were 16 or 17 years old that they indeed do not have lawful immigration status. And I think it was compelling for both Republicans and Democrats to support this legislation. And it was also not just compelling, but it was simply the right thing to do. And as you know, over the years, there wasn't a lot of action. There were simply a lot of legislative proposals. It became a very polarized issue, to where many of the original supporters of this legislation withdrew their support. And as we all saw during the most significant time in the DREAM Act's legislative history, in the fall, there were simply people who did not support the legislation who originally supported it. And got the first vote ever and passed in the House of Representatives in the fall of 2010. And then once it got to the Senate, as many of you know, the Senate was voting to actually proceed with the House piece of legislation, stop any debate, and then take a vote. And that procedural vote failed by 5 votes, as many of you know. So we are now back again. The legislation has been again proposed again as of May of 2011 by Senator Reid. It hasn't had much action. There was a hearing actually in June, and many people testified in support of it. But in terms of legislative advocacy, because of the change in climate and both our Congress and Senate, the outlook is still unknown. And as just a very side kind of Dream Act related legal kind of background, around the same time that the Dream Act was proposed in 2001, states, and we have people here who've worked on that legislation in the past, also began to acknowledge that there was a real investment to be made in students who were going to Texas schools or California schools or other state schools who were graduating at the top of their class, like Ms. Carizales, who were flourishing and have much to give to our states, and provided for legislation in many states, now 12, that would provide in-state tuition and allow individuals to pursue a college education despite their immigration status if they met certain, again, statutory requirements. As you can imagine, because the issue has become very polarized over the last several years, it's been subject to lawsuits, which to date have none have been successful, and subject to threats of repeal, and other states have even affirmatively passed legislation not to allow this kind of legislation. More recently, if you're following what happens in terms of legislative pieces or policy pieces with regard to Dreamer characteristics, as an immigration lawyer, and there are many immigration lawyers here, there was a prosecutorial discretion memo that was released in June. And for the first time, because I think the government acknowledges that there is a large number of students here who pose no threat to this country, who have everything to give this country, and in no way will threaten us or deteriorate us, and will do exactly the opposite, have now included Dreamer characteristics to be considered should they have contact with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And of course, as always, Immigration and Customs Enforcement will have discretion on a case-by-case basis to determine whether this particular individual doesn't merit status, but perhaps should have action deferred on their case until further things may happen in their lives, et cetera. So we do see the Dreamer issue prevalent every day in both the legal world and, I think, political world. And I certainly, as an immigration lawyer and advocate, believe that we do have a moral, and I think it would be of great benefit to take action, especially in this particular community, for addressing this issue and providing them and allowing them to flourish and seek their dreams.
Thank you, Marisol. And just a note, just how polarized the issue has become, the original sponsor of the original Dream Act in 2001 was none other than Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, who now has completely done a 180 and now opposes it. So it is, you know, another emblematic symbol of how much, you know, this issue has polarized the country. Let's continue, please, with George.
I used to work for Orrin. sorry. there's a saying in Spanish that says, el tigre no es como lo pintan. And I think that Marisol just painted a beautiful picture of the Dreamer Act. But the reality is something completely different, and I think that what happens quite often is in typical, and I'm going to be very blunt, so because I'm not running for anything, the typical liberal mind thinks of the heart rather than thinking of the law. And what we're doing is strictly looking at the law. What part of the word illegal do you not understand? I'll be very blunt, okay? We've got a situation here, and which is why I converted, you know. We've got a situation here where people call black white and white black. I mean, everything from the ridiculousness of the policy in the Middle East, you know, with the state of Israel, to the ridiculousness of the situation that we've got on immigration now.
Okay, excuse me. Okay.
Well, let me say this. Racism doesn't scare me.
George, hold on
Yo
one
no
second.
Soy racista.
Hold on one second. Okay. We're not going to accept any of that. We're not going to accept that. We want to have a civil debate, okay, where people take in and listen to different issues. If you're going to get into personal attacks, I'm going to ask you to leave. If not, I'm going to make you leave. Okay? That's not what we're here for. Okay? Please just listen to what everybody has to say. Then you will have a chance to ask questions of anybody you want on this panel. Thank you. Go ahead, George.
Thank you very much. You know, it's one of those situations where society is blamed and society has got to come up with the issue instead of the individual. The individual is the problem here. We had nothing to do with this young lady's coming across the border. It was her parents, her mother. Why not let her mother work it out with her? Not us. What is it about us? You know, we've got a situation where we've got people that actually believe nowadays that no borders is good. I mean, look at the sign here. No borders. How can a nation just survive without any borders, people? How can a nation survive without any borders? You know,
Please, come on. Let's keep it down, please.
Well, all right, so let me tell
you. I can't fight that one. He did ask a question. Go ahead.
The answer is a nation cannot survive without borders. That is the answer, and that is the fact. No nation, from the state of Israel to the United States, cannot survive without border being secure. And that's the first thing that we propose. First of all, you've got to stop the illegal flow, okay? That's number one. After that, then we're going to have to talk about reforming the laws, because we do realize that people are victimized, if we want to use that word, victimized or caught in the middle because of the laws. And those laws have got to be changed. No problem. But only after the borders as well as entry points are secured. The third thing that needs to happen is that we recognize that we do need a temporary worker program, but it needs to be managed properly so that people can come here to work and then go. We cannot allow, and we will not stand for it. Remember, in 2004, when there were parades of undocumented people marching down the street, hundreds of thousands. Let me tell you, Middle America responded to that sight. And we are responding to it constantly now. Yes, I am an American first. Aunque hablo español, I am an American first. And I will stand by my flag and defend this nation to the last drop of my blood. Okay? And if you think that's funny, folks, I really feel sorry for you. Because you don't have a concept of yourselves then. You know, this idea of personal responsibility, this idea of political insecurity, I mean, that is a personal problem. That is not the problem of the society, of our nation. So what happened in 1986 is different from what's happened now, because we have, 13 million undocumented aliens? I mean, the audacity of a young lady who is here in the United States illegally being looked at as a hero. Where would that happen in any other nation? Where? You know, this is crazy, folks. If you're here illegally, you're here illegally, and you need to work within the system. And that's the word. That's the word that I will use. I'll be quiet, and I'll let you comment.
Thank you very much, George. We have our last presenter, and I'm sorry, General, I forgot to mention your biography. Lieutenant General Sanchez, in case you didn't know, you probably already know, is running for U.S. Senate as a Democratic candidate for Kate Bailey Hutchinson's seat that she's going to be vacating. And as Marisol and Carolina mentioned, there is a strong military component to the DREAM Act, and I would like the General to touch on that. Thank you for being here.
Well, let me start out by thanking you all for being here tonight, and then for the organizers of this event, thanks for putting the forum together. I think this is a critically important issue for America today, and it has been for some time. where do I come from? I come from 33 years, 3 months, and 11 days in uniform serving my country. I've served in 3 wars, Desert Shield, Desert Storm, the conflict in Kosovo, and then Iraq, and had troops deployed for 5 years continuous doing battle for America. Immigration reform is an extremely complex issue for the country. As has already been evidenced here tonight, it is also a very emotional issue for America. And for some of us, it's more emotional than others. But I think America and Americans need to focus on who we are. What is America? Where have we come from? Where are we going? And what do we represent? First and foremost, I think every one of us comes from immigrants. We come from a society that values diversity. We come from a society that is represented in an exemplary fashion, in uniform, by everyone and everybody that you represent. Every ethnic group, every race, every religion, every culture that comes to America has the opportunity to serve in our military, and it becomes one. It becomes one because it is focused on defending our Constitution and the oath that every young man and woman takes, like some of you sitting out there. I can see some hats from veterans. You know what I'm talking about. You swear to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And you swear an oath to the country, not to a party, not to an army, but to the country, to our flag. And what that represents is equality and opportunity for all. Let me get to immigration. Is immigration broken in our country? You bet it is. Our federal government has abrogated its responsibility in providing for immigration reform in its comprehensive form, which is the only way that we can solve this problem for the country. That's the only way. You can't approach it from a security enforcement standpoint. You can't approach it from an economic employer jobs standpoint. You can't approach it from a Dream Act standpoint in isolation. This has to be a comprehensive approach. Look, I've had responsibility during my time deployed as a commander of U.S. forces and international forces for securing the borders of 2 different countries. First, it was Kosovo, and then Iraq. I understand the complexities, the economic, security, political, and personal complexities of trying to enforce immigration standards and the integration of immigrants into a society. And there is no sequential process that's going to get us there. You can't argue for one ahead of the other. It has to be comprehensive, and it has to be simultaneous, and you have to make some very tough decisions and very tough choices as you move down this path towards solving the nation's problem. So given that the government has abrogated its responsibility to the American people, since we maintain a very ineffective, dysfunctional immigration infrastructure and a process, this is what has caused some of our states, like Texas, like Illinois, to approve Dream Act-like legislation. We have it approved within our own state. Our immigration system is simply not effective, so we have to fix it. But we cannot resort to draconian solutions, broad characterizations, and commentary that is divisive, because what it does is just further divides us. The solutions that we're seeking are not in inflammatory, stereotyping, draconian language. It's in us coming together as Americans to a common ground, to what is best for the country, to what is best for the people, and to what is best for each and everyone involved. A lot of extreme solutions have been proposed in this overall debate, many infeasible, and we just have to walk away from those. Now, as far as the DREAM Act is concerned, I wholeheartedly support the DREAM Act. And I support the DREAM Act because this is a very targeted component of total reform that is focused on a segment of the population that deserves the consideration. I have seen these young men and women in battle, probably more than anyone in here. I have seen non-citizens who were more than willing to sacrifice their lives so that you could continue with your lives, so that you could continue with your picnics and supporting and waving the flag every time one of them came home injured. I've seen them struggle with the immigration processes of our country. The only thing they asked for, willing to die, the only thing they were asking for was for us to expedite their citizenship. Is this undocumented problem a struggle for the country? You bet it is. But we've got to come to a solution. We've got to seek a path to citizenship for these young men and women that are willing to lay down their lives for us. And this is of benefit to the country, and it's of benefit to our military services because it increases the pool of eligible recruits for our country. Some of you may not know this, but only 25% of military age young men and women qualify for service. 25% of Americans. And many have no desire to don the uniform of our country. Just look at our political leadership. How many of them have military service where they've been willing to sacrifice for America? So when you look at this from a military perspective, there is a good argument to be made for these young men and women with proper accountability, proper responsibility, and proper oversight to be allowed to serve, don the uniform, and defend our country within the constraints that are laid out in the DREAM Act. It is, as we all know now, it is not unconditional. It is a conditional residency dependent upon their service, satisfactory service, by the way. And, oh, by the way, just for information, more non-citizens, 80% of non-citizens satisfactorily complete their obligation to our military than do our American citizens. Only 70% of American citizens satisfactorily complete military service. So these kids are dedicated. And from my experience in the military, we need to allow them that benefit if they want to serve this adopted country of theirs. It's the right thing to do. And they're replacing some of our kids that have no desire to stand up for your rights to defend your democracy. Thank you.
Okay. You done, General? Thank you very much for your comments, General, and thank you, everybody, for the panelists. We're going to start opening up the floor. If you have questions, please start lining up here at the mic for questions. Before I open it up, I want to give panelists a chance to respond to what any of the other panelists said, if anybody wants to say anything about what their colleagues said.
Can I just start really, really quick? Okay. I was asked here to be just as a representative for DREAM Act. You know, I'm an advocate and whatnot, and myself. I am caught in the middle of the broken immigration system. Just, I know there is a fear for amnesty, and I understand that concern. But just to be very specific, as Marisol already mentioned, the DREAM Act is not an amnesty. It's a very specific legal process, which only out of the 2.2 million DREAMers that are here in the country, only 800,000 will qualify for this. So that itself tells you that it's not everyone without any, just like not checking things. No, they're going to check things. And even, you know, some of my friends that I know or some fellow DREAMers that are now in risk of not getting it because it has so many specific qualification. Also, I am not a hero. I've never been viewed as a hero. So neither has my mother. I think we're just part of a society that is trying to survive just like many other Americans are right now with the economic struggle. So I just wanted to clear that out. And I've only... Thank you. I've only done what has been asked for me to be a good American representative. I was taught to be this way. I was raised to be this way. And if I am maybe viewed as I've done so many good things that could qualify me as a hero, I mean, cool, that's fine. But I am not a hero. I've just done what I've been taught since I was 9 years old. Thank you.
Thank you, Carolina. Okay. Marina?
And I just want to say also, I mean, I don't think that we should ask individuals like Carolina, you should, you know, be apologizing because you've been here and now you expect that you're owed something. I don't think that she thinks that she's owed, you know, some kind of conditional residency. And, you know, when we say that it's an issue, and as Michelle Rodriguez says, it's an issue between her and her mother, it really is an issue between us as citizens of the United States and the immigrant population. It is because these individuals have been living in this country. They have been providing services to us for many years. They pay taxes. They pick our agriculture.
Okay,
they build
our
houses. They do a number of things. And our response to them is not... We respond to you in a way of saying, you go hide in the shadows, but you provide for us every single day, and we will not have to deal with you. The time is we have to deal with them. We have to deal with our immigration system in this country.
Okay, George.
We have to deal.
Real quick before, because people are going to be standing for a while, but please, George,
okay.
Go ahead.
We have to deal with the immigration system, but we do not have to deal with individuals who have broken the law. The person has broken the law. And it's between her and her mother, regardless of what you say. Using the word deserve is ridiculous, Marisol. It's ridiculous. No one deserves anything.
What I'm saying is that these individuals are in the United States, and if we were to fix our antiquated immigration system, it would not be that they necessarily are allocated this benefit. They would merit, under statutory interpretation, the benefit. Oh.
Well, typical lawyer who will always find a loophole.
Okay. All right.
Well, you had said earlier, you know, that I'm talking from an emotional perspective.
You are.
I am talking from a legal, pragmatic, and economic perspective.
No.
That
you
is where I'm coming from.
Okay. You started right. out your comments by saying you feel sorry for them.
I did not.
Okay. This is great stuff. Great stuff. Let's go to the audience for them to have a say. Please, ma'am, if you can identify yourself.
My name is Paula Villagran, and I'm from San Antonio. I had a few questions for Carolina and Marisol.
Well, if I can ask you to keep it to one question, so then I can have everybody else also have a chance, because you said a few.
Well, maybe. Just two questions then.
Okay, that's a good negotiation, too.
Okay. I was listening to you speak, and you said you just found out that you were here illegally. At what age did you find out?
When I was a junior in Alma Heights High School trying to apply for college.
So you were what, 17 or 16?
16.
16
yes.
years old. And when you asked your mother right now, I mean, is she here legally now or is she still here illegally?
We filed the paperwork for legal status, but we are pending case.
Okay.
Because after 2001 asylum, we know all the immigration system slowed down.
Okay.
So,
she already filed to be legally.
Yes, and like I just want to make this point. There is a lot of dreamers who have filed their work, but it's pending because of the slow process in the immigration system.
Okay, so she filed in 2001, you said?
A little bit before
that. Okay, then Marisol, okay. For people that
last one, we promise, right?
Yeah,
last one.
Okay, for people that come here and want to file to become here as a legal resident, how long is the process to become a legal resident, and what is the dollar amount? Is there a fee that the person has to pay?
There are many applications, and it depends on the benefit you're seeking. But for instance, Carolina, just to give you a picture, Carolina, probably an uncle or someone filed for her mother or father. right now, if you file a petition for a sibling, you're a United States citizen, you file a petition for a sibling from Mexico, you're going to wait at least 15 or 16 years until a visa is available. If you file, if you're a resident alien and you want to file for a son or daughter of yours that's over 21, you're going to wait 18 years for your son or daughter to join you. That's how antiquated our system is right now.
Okay. Ma'am.
And is there a dollar amount or no?
Ma'am. For anybody, you know, we can probably continue the conversation afterwards when we break up, but let's try to have everybody have a chance to ask their question. Go ahead, sir, if you can identify yourself.
My name is Tom Mendes. I went to Alamo Heights as well. I just want to say something here. First of all, it's not so much of a question. It's more of statements.
Okay, let's just please keep it brief so everybody has a chance.
Okay. First of all, these immigrants that are trying or are here in the United States, the dues have been paid for them to have the ability for their kids to be educated, to join the military. And you know who paid these dues? Do you know who paid these dues, Mr. Rodriguez?
I would imagine the American people have.
How about the Latino that died in Iraq, that died in Afghanistan?
Well, I don't look at it as Latino, sir.
No. How about
I don't look at it as Latinos.
Okay.
Contrary to what diversity people think about. No. You've asked me a question. You're putting me on the spot. I'm telling you, I don't believe in names of groups and divisions. I don't believe in that.
Well,
we are either
bad.
All Americans or we're not.
That doesn't make you right.
Well, but I stand.
I'm not through.
White person died just as much for her as anybody else.
I'm not through.
Un negro también.
I'm not through. First of all, there's Afghanistan, there's Iraq, there's Desert Storm. All these Latinos who died, who shed their blood out there, they're the ones who paid the dues. They're the ones who paid the dues.
Please, let people have a say, okay?
They're
going to keep this civil.
They're the ones who paid the dues. And this light that you saw, that's the train coming straight at you, buddy.
Well,
okay.
That's a train.
I would say it's another train coming at you.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna institute one more rule here, and that is no personal attacks, please. Okay? No personal attacks on anybody.
No personal attacks.
Okay.
Chris, when you get to heaven, I hope you make room and say, what are these Latinos doing here?
I've been a Christian for over 30 years.
We're the ones that hate.
Okay, hold on.
We're the ones that are hating.
Okay. Can we have quiet, please? Okay. Go ahead, Skyler.
I've been a Christian, sir, for over 30 years. I know there will be a lot of Jews, a lot of Asians, a lot of blacks in heaven. And I'm more than happy to welcome my brothers and sisters in Christ. But that has nothing to do with whether or not some of them have broken laws. Everybody breaks laws. Some of you just broke a law that deserves to be thrown in jail for.
Yep.
Simple as that. A law is a law. If you can't respect it, stay out of a country that has laws.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you. Sir, next question.
Can I pass? This seems to be a fairly charged room. I actually have mine written down, so it'll be contained.
Okay. Is it this was a question or a comment?
It's a question at the end.
Oh, at the end.
Of course. Okay. I get to do my setup, and it's very well organized. You'll be fine.
All right, we'll give you a chance.
I wouldn't set you up poorly. My name is Dr. Richard Owen. I have a PhD in leadership studies from right here in San Antonio at Our Lady of the Lake University. Very recent. I started back to school. So, in 1986, Reagan did establish a precedent, as we know in the law, and have heard from lawyers, and started down a slippery slope. Anything further only encourages future abuse, and unfortunately, the number gets larger every time. I agree that dreamers bring much to the table, but the most they could do to help America and repay for their education is to return home very peacefully and show their home country the better way that they have learned. That would be leadership.
That would.
I am very proud that you've embraced our culture, and it's something that we as Americans like to spread on a global basis. That's one of the best ways that we could do it. One question. Of the 25% of U.S. citizens, you said there were only 25% that were qualified to serve in the military. Why is that?
It is a whole series of issues, from criminal issues to obesity to lack of education. It's a whole series of issues.
Then I'd say we have greater issues than allowing to take their place that they're never going to learn to overcome. They need to lose weight and get smarter so they have the opportunity to serve.
That is our societal challenge. That's exactly right.
Okay.
And it's a challenge for every American.
Thank you for your question. Go ahead.
Hello, I'm Matthew Sheridan, and I'm a college-bound student. I have a question for Mr. Chris or Mr. Rodriguez. You guys say that the American people pay for this money that is being given to immigrants to go to college, but are you telling me that the money that is being given to the immigrants is not being given to the institutions that are teaching these immigrants how to be better people and the institutions that are providing Americans jobs?
I'm not sure what you're asking, but I will tell you. Let me answer what I think you're asking, okay? First of all, I think that we're spending too much money, period, okay? I think that the federal government's spending too much money. So, you know, in that aspect of it, whether it's going to Fulano or whether it's going to John Doe, whatever. Even if it's going to education, buddy. I'm going to make a real strong statement here. Again, so get ready with your boos and screams. But I don't think everybody needs to go to college. I don't think everybody needs to go to college. And I think that there are a lot of people that get Pell Grants and everything else that we end up paying for that don't deserve it. Okay, and I'll use that word, don't deserve it, because they're not competent or they didn't even study. I mean, I know kids on a daily basis that go to high school that just go to sit there. They're not learning, you know. Mr. Sanchez a little while ago made the comment about how, you know, all these kids are not prepared. They're not prepared because the war on poverty has failed. Since 1965, it's failed. And
okay.
It's been nothing but digging into the ground.
Okay. I am going to ask both people asking questions and the presenters to please try to keep it focused to the DREAM Act. I know it's an emotional issue. And, you know, it also encompasses the whole immigration aspect. But we are here to try to debate specifically the DREAM Act. So let's please try to keep a focus on that. Skyler, I think you wanted to respond.
Yes. You were asking about whether, if I understood your question correctly, you know, whether we're paying for your education. And the fact of the matter is,
yes, sir.
We are.
Not my education, but the money is going to the colleges which are American and paying for American jobs.
But guess who's in the colleges? Yeah. If the DREAM Act passes with the illegals going there, guess who's going to get the benefit of those dollars?
Exactly.
The illegals, the foreigners who don't have any business being
but
here.
But then when they go to work in the American companies, are they not benefiting?
I don't care. They don't belong here.
They are illegal.
They need to get their butt back to where they came from and come through the process legally.
Okay, thank you.
Carolina, do you wanna respond to this at all?
Yes. I am aware that I have been benefited by this country's money, but I am also very ready to give it back by being like an employee within the American community. And I'm also so ready to give back to my community because most of us dreamers have the tendency to not only serve what we have been given, but also give back to all the communities. We understand all the issues that happen there. And I mean, I'm more than ready to do it. I just need to be given the opportunity.
We're going to debate the numbers all night long because they're going to cite statistics from organizations that obviously want to skew data that would support their political platform. I haven't finished, and I'm not being disrespectful.
George, let's everybody have a say, please.
And as you have alleged on many occasions, you allege that people from the other side skew statistics to their benefit. So what I'm saying is, we're going to go back and forth with statistics, but I don't think that anybody can say here that individuals who have been in this country, immigrants, have been given a free ride. Dreamers pay tuition to our state colleges and universities. Individuals who've gone to our public schools, their parents are paying taxes, sales taxes, are paying property taxes, they're paying income taxes, are paying into our Social Security system, which, by the way, they're not getting back in many cases. So by no means have these individuals been given a free ride. And I don't appreciate you calling me a liar, because I'm telling you, based on information, as the information that you're spewing today, this is information that I believe is credible and reliable.
Okay, yeah. Let's try to not let's try to please not make it personal. Okay, next question.
Okay, my name is Caitlin, and so earlier you were saying that
George.
You were saying that what we need to do to address this problem is first we need to stop illegals from coming in, and then we'll address the problems with the illegals here. My question is that if we were to stop all illegals, like in this hypothetical world, why would we still pay attention to the problems that the immigrants that have come already that we can't take back already because we don't know they're here, we don't know all the details, so why would we be faced with that question? How would us stopping that solve their problem at all?
It's not going to solve their problem. It's going to solve our problem. Saying again, you're looking at it strictly from their, you know, whatever their, they are, okay? Mm-hmm. The problem is for the United States. We stop, we secure the border first, as well as all points of entry. Mm-hmm. And then after that, then we talk about reforming the laws and how to address the issue of the people that are here illegally. Now, obviously, there's a, you know, again, una mentira, and I'll use that word, that has been perpetrated of people saying we're going to deport people, there's going to be masses of people being deported, you know. No, we're not saying deport. We're saying they need to be identified. They need to be brought out of the shadows in some form or fashion, and then we need to figure out what to do. Some of them could become temporary workers. Some of them could become asylum holders. You know, but that's after. The problem we don't want. We did it in 1986, an amnesty. Now, and we don't, and that was only for about 3 million, 3.5 million. Now we're going to do it for 13? No, no more, no more. See, we're on a slippery slope, as has been said, and we're not going to go down that road anymore.
Let me, if I may.
Absolutely, General.
Let me add a little bit of reality to the border security issue here, from my perspective, okay? My reality, not anyone else's.
For sure.
As I said during my commentary, I was responsible for securing the borders of two different countries, Kosovo and Iraq. I guarantee you that America does not have sufficient forces to secure the borders of our country.
We agree.
I guarantee you that.
We agree.
And we could deploy the entire army, the entire military of the United States, and you could not secure our borders to the point where there is no infiltration.
Well, my question is, why would we still address it? Why would we still address the problem?
Well, I mean, you have to. You have to. It is mandatory. The discussion that went on earlier about no borders. I think reality is that that there are borders in the world. That borders signify national sovereignty, and national sovereignty issues are significant issues for nation states, and therefore they have to be sustained, they have to be protected, and the issue of illegality is one that is significant for any country in this world. And what you have to do is, as I stated in my opening comments, is that you have to address the problem comprehensively, simultaneously, because I think in the end state, security is critical. You're still going to have infiltration to one means or other. You then have to tackle the problem of what do you do with the 12 million or 15 million or 20 million, whatever the real number is, of those that are already here. Accountability, responsibility, and paying taxes and being penalized for having violated our laws are mandatory requirements. I mean, I think everybody recognizes that that has to be done. And that there has to be some solution, and the solution is not that you're going to pack them all up in cattle cars and send them back home where they came from. First of all, it's going to be very difficult. Okay, it's just an infeasible solution.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions, actually, but I'm going to limit it down to just, just one.
Good.
Because
good
I think
you.
It's the most relevant to what we're talking about. And I was just wondering, is it true that in the DREAM Act, it eliminates the repeal of in-state tuition bans? In other words, it bars Pell Grants for immigrants that want to be applicants for the DREAM Act? And if this is true, wouldn't that just economically coerce them to join the military anyway because they're coming over for mostly economical reasons anyway?
Okay, who is that question directed to?
Anyone who can answer. I'm confused.
Okay. try to repeat it because I think the panelists are still trying to wade through it.
But I guess, before you say that, Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez.
Okay, please. Before you say that, I just want to remind our crowd and listeners that you're listening to KSTX 89.1 FM, and this is the Fronteras Town Hall meeting.
Yeah, I get the question because I'm the first one in the line, but could you repeat the question because I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question. Yeah, I'm confused.
Okay. Is it true that Is it true that the DREAM Act eliminates the repeal of in-state tuition bans? In other words, it bars Pell Grants for immigrants that want to apply for, the DREAM Act. And if this is true, wouldn't that just, in a sense, economically coerce them to join the military, to join for the military, because, they're coming over here for economical reasons in the first place?
Okay. I don't think there were any repeals included in any of the DREAM Act legislation that was proposed. And you may be talking right now with states, the 12 states right now, that do allow for in-state tuition for individuals who are here that we call DREAMers or that are here without proper immigration status. Those individuals are not eligible for any federal financial aid, no Pell Grants, anything like that. And they are eligible in some states for state financial aid, but as you know, there's limited state financial aid. So these individuals are paying tuition, and as Claudia was saying earlier, she probably had to leave Incarnate Word because of the high tuition rate that she was paying to go to a public university for that very reason. Because although they're allowed to be enrolled in our universities, they are not given any federal funding as many other immigrants in the United States.
General, if I'm interpreting his question right, I think he was trying to say maybe is there an incentive on behalf of the military here to want to support the DREAM Act so they can get more people in the forces?
The incentive is very clear. The incentive is a larger recruiting base, okay, where you in fact take the pool of DREAMers and they become eligible. These are to a large extent, high-quality recruits that are motivated to serve, and they are motivated to properly and adequately serve the country in order to be able to get citizenship status, so it increases the pool for us.
Okay. Next one, please. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Uriel Villa, and I'm currently a high school student. And I first of all wanted to address that I believe the word illegal and they and there are a bit inhumanizing and kind of racist. So, I mean, if we could please eliminate that. This meeting specifically for the DREAM Act and basically what Mr. Rodriguez is talking about as a whole of immigrants in the country. And, well, we're specifically talking about kids that meet the conditions for the DREAM Act. So I believe we should keep it in that kind of standpoint a bit more. For the DREAM Act, and but my question is, first of all, I'm gonna go into not a political kind of standpoint because kind of politician, but the country was built by immigrants, and I mean our founding fathers had to be immigrants because we weren't born here, and I mean if they had the potential to build our country into what we are now, and create a great constitution that's been strong, and we probably have the only constitution has lasted for years and actually worked for us. Do you believe, Mr. Rodriguez, do you believe that she, you think she has what it takes to make a change in our state?
Again, as far as an individual, the only thing wrong with that young lady down there is that she's here illegally.
Okay, so my question is, do you think she has the potential?
Sin papeles.
Okay, I understand.
Okay,
I know Spanish.
Muy bien.
Okay.
Good.
So my question was, do you think she has the potential to be a politician here in the States or be in
not
the same...
Not while she's illegal.
Okay, potential.
Potential? Yeah, I think she's got a potential to be here or in Monterrey.
Okay, but I'm talking about be great here in the United States.
Well, that's fine. And I think that she's got the potential if she becomes legal. Now, let me tell you, you made the comment. You made the comment that this country was built by immigrants. I will tell you that the converse is also possible, where this country could be destroyed by immigrants.
And how is that?
Okay, let's keep it down. Let's keep it down. George, you want to explain a little bit what you mean by that?
By what?
By that the country could be destroyed by
immigrants. Because I think that this country could become potentially very divisive. It could become nothing. It could become Balkanized. You know, I'm sure the general could explain to you what Balkanization means. But it could become nothing more.
Keep it down, please.
It could become nothing more than segments and regions where people cease to be unified in anything other than.
Okay, as of now, I don't believe that the illegals.
I'm telling you that it could.
Yeah, I know it could. That's a possibility, not really a fact, right? As of right now.
Okay, let's keep it down, please. Let's keep it down.
How many people do you know that are pushing the idea of speaking Spanish only, or that promote the idea of nothing but electing Hispanics only because they can represent Hispanics better? I mean, as we speak right now, LULAC is down there pushing the whole idea of segregation of communities, again, based on race.
I'm going to intervene here. We're getting way off topic. Wow. Okay, we're getting way off topic.
Let me
to discuss. You brought it up. We're here to discuss the Dream Act. Mm-hmm. You know, if people have their questions for Carolina, what she would like to do for our panelists, on what they think of one aspect or another Dream Act, I would really like to hear that.
So can I ask you a question?
Can I ask a question?
Do you think you have what it takes to make this country a better country?
I have been trying to make this country better since I learned about my legal status.
So you have the potential, right?
Yes, I do.
Then I believe in you, and I think we all should believe in her.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead, please identify yourself.
Hi, thank you for coming. So I hear a lot of people talking about economic and legal arguments, and in addition to these weird anecdotal arguments that bear no meaning. So if legally these people were here, legislation was passed to allow them to go to school, so it's legal, so the whole illegal argument aside, right, what is being done to streamline these immigrants into payroll jobs so they can contribute to our GDP in payroll taxes, in income taxes, in sales taxes, property taxes, so we can get return on investment? So from an economic standpoint, I think Lieutenant General Sanchez brings up a great point in that this is a complex problem with no easy answers. What is being done to get that return on investment, right? So they can contribute to the GDP and we can get our money back that we've invested in them. And I'll take answers from Carolina as into what you're doing to get a job after you graduate, and from Lieutenant General Sanchez.
Let me start out by saying, you know, back to my opening comments, I think our federal government has continued over the years, probably for the last 15 years, to kick the can down the road on immigration reform. The political implications of tackling immigration reform in its entirety is pretty severe from either party's perspective, any individual politician's perspective, and therefore the better answer is to do nothing, which is what has got us into the position we're in. And I agree with you that that something has to be done in order for us to fix the system to keep, you know, 15 to 18 years is a totally unsatisfactory timeline for a decision to be made on an immigrant application or an immigration application. So what we have to be able to do is, once again, expedite those processes, fix this Byzantine system that we have, to be able to get proper decisions to these people that want to come to America and to get them here legally, and then to be able to solve this extremely tough problem that we have of the 12 to 15, as I said, 18, 20 million illegals or undocumented immigrants that we have in the country.
Sure. With all due respect, I don't think that necessarily answers the question. So with respect to the DREAM Act, how are people getting jobs after they've gone through college?
Oh, that I can't.
How are they being helped out?
I mean, they getting... I'm not okay. I'm not providing job opportunities for immigrants.
Right. So we're allowing them to go to school here, then we're kicking them back out.
So you can ask somebody else that's doing that. I'm not into that business.
Okay, you wanted Carolina to answer sure. what her plans are, you know, what her ambitions are, right?
So, yes.
Okay, from your question, you mentioned a lot of the word taxes, as in how are we going to be filing them and whatnot.
More specifically, what are your plans after you graduate?
What are my plans after I graduate? Well, let's say we do pass this legislation as you suggested, right? Mm-hmm. I will just take one of the three major job offers that I have been made already, but I cannot take because of my legal status, which is Teach America. I've been also, I had a call from the Washington Post recently, and my other offer would be to work for my community as a leader, like going to high schools and trying to push these students to pursue higher education. So the jobs offers are already there for me.
So would you agree that the DREAM Act just doesn't go far enough in terms of helping you become a tax-paying citizen?
Actually, it does, because once the DREAM Act passes, I will be able to receive a work permit and or a social security number, which I can then file and then be able to work.
So then you plan on paying all your taxes and contributing to
I've already been paying all my taxes, yes.
Let me do a quick...
Hold on. Skylar has been waiting patiently here, so I got to go to him, okay?
To partly also, I answer your question. You know, this nation was founded on people who were able to pull up their bootstraps and find their own way in life and work hard for their living, no matter what it took. And they were able to create jobs when there wasn't a job. It is not the government's job to make sure you have a job.
Exactly.
So first, the question wasn't directed towards you, but the
doesn't matter. I answered.
She's going to work, right? So it's not that anyone's giving her a job. She went and she got educated. She learned for herself, and she's going to find her own job that she's been offered. So how is anyone handing her a job?
Because you're asking how this act is going to help them
citizen status question,
getting
right?
a job. That's essentially what you asked.
Right, because you can't get a job if you're not a legal citizen, right? You can't pay payroll. This is a citizen question. It's not a fact that she's lazy or she doesn't want to work or pull up her bootstraps. It has nothing to do with it. She graduates. She has a degree. She wants to work. What is it?
Absolutely.
Let me follow up just briefly.
General and then Marisol. Yes.
Okay. Because I was a little flip in my answer to you.
Sure.
But I have not. Very honestly, I have not been involved in trying to get jobs for DREAM Act students and college graduates. I have been involved, though, extensively in trying to get jobs for veterans over the last 5 years since I retired. And the complexity of the problem for our veterans is that the economy, as we all know, is very difficult, and there is a challenge in trying to get our enterprises, business enterprises, to understand what their capacities are. I think you run into a similar problem with the DREAM Act students as they come out. I mean, once they become legal, once they get their job visas, then you're still into the same job market that is competitive, and there are other priorities for jobs that are higher than the young college graduate.
Absolutely, but as long as that option is open to them.
And in terms of your question about paying taxes and, you know, receiving the benefit back from individuals here, I mean, there's just no doubt, and there's lots of statistics from the Congressional Budget Office, all kinds of places. We do have a large immigrant community who does not have work authorization, but they are issued identification numbers by the IRS. There are ways to file taxes, and these individuals file taxes.
Great.
And they do pay taxes. A lot of times they're not return money because, you know, they can't identify who they are, and they, you know, they're using, yes, a social security number that's invented, et cetera, but they are paying into our system. And in many, many, many studies, they are not reaping the benefits. We are.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Okay. Thank you. Next one.
Hello. My name is Adrian Rocha. I'm from El Paso. population 725,000, actually the safest large city in America, 3 murders all of last year. And as you know, it sits directly adjacent to Ciudad Juarez, the most dangerous city in the world. So I would say the borders are probably secure enough if we can keep El Paso the safest city in America. So that's my quick quib. But what I'm more interested in is I've become, and I'm sure everybody here is, more than familiar with the positions that you hold in regards to the DREAM Act. But what I'm interested in is you guys switching positions and saying what are the pros and what are the cons. Switch sides. Because as David Hume once noted, if you, as a pundit, know nothing about the minutiae of your opponent's argument, then you're ignorant of your own. So I'm really interested in what, from in particular, the people that were opposed to the DREAM Act. Let me hear what you have that's in favor of it. And those who are in favor of the DREAM Act, let me hear what you have as a con to it.
Okay, I'm not sure you're going to get very far with that, but let's give that a try. Skyler?
Well, I do know something about the DREAM Act. I do know that it is supposed to be only for those who got here before the age of 16 and have lived here for 5 years. I understand that that's the idea. I also understand that they are supposed to be enrolled in a school. They're supposed to do military, whatever, something along those lines, so that they can show that they have a reason to stay here. That is primarily what I understand of the DREAM Act in terms of the as far as the requirements of it.
Go ahead. I think he was trying to say if you find any validity at all to the other view.
Yes, sir.
I understand that people want to have a better life, and making a life here in this country. It is the greatest country on the face of God's green earth. I don't think any sane person would deny that. However, you're also expected to be where you're planted. You know, that doesn't mean you can't migrate, any of that. What it simply means is you, just because you were not born here, doesn't automatically say, ooh, they have a better life. I want that, so I should have a right to go over there. That's not the way it works. And that's essentially what the DREAM Act is trying to do, is foster that idea that people should have a right, you know, for their education, to get their education here, because maybe they don't like the education system in Mexico. And again, let's be clear, we're not just talking about Mexico here. We're talking about Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, places like that. People of all stripes are coming over here. So it isn't just about one particular nationality or ethnicity, and I understand that. And I understand the desire to do better for yourself, but there is a legal process to doing that, and that is what you have to follow. Every nation has laws. You reverse the situation. If we'll talk about Mexico. You go the reverse situation in Mexico. If you're caught there illegally, you can be executed. That's the reality of their law. That is their immigration law. And everybody who knows anything about immigration law in Mexico knows this.
Okay.
Let me...
George, hold on 1 second. He wanted to hear everybody's... Okay, so let's try to make it quick. George, do you see any validity at all?
My short answer to you is I don't support the DREAM Act in any form or fashion. However, I will say that I think that I do believe that the young lady at the end of the table could offer a lot to the United States and folks like her. The issue is not race. The issue is not ethnicity. The issue is not class. The issue is legal status. It is a legal status issue. And that's the biggest problem. As far as the DREAM Act goes, there's no way that I support it in any form or fashion. Is that good?
To reverse,
does that answer your question?
Do you see any validity to the concerns that folks like George and Skyler profess as to the DREAM Act? Do you see any validity to their perspective?
I do in the breaking the law and whatnot, but that, I mean, I just want to kind of retouch on your immigration about Mexico real quick. Recently, we just passed a reform where we're actually trying to fix all the people from Guatemala, Honduras, like they're trying to fix other immigration status so they're not being executed. And that's just fact because I do follow laws from like different countries, just FYI. Also, I do understand your concerns, but I don't give them any validity because I know they touch on amnesty, illegal, not illegal, and not so forth. And I've already explained my views on the amnesty side and how it's not an amnesty. I'm not going to get tired of saying it. It's not an amnesty. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Yes. My name is Bill Porter.
Thank you for waiting patiently. That's fine. Everybody in line.
I think you're going to like the question, okay? My name is Bill Porter. I'm a native of San Antonio. My wife, Brenda, has been a third-grade school teacher here in San Antonio 34 years. She's given me two beautiful daughters, Avery, 26, Catherine, 17. Before I ask you the question, I'm going to tell you I'm here for my daughters. For all of you that are younger than me, I'm here for you. Doesn't matter the race, doesn't matter the religion, doesn't matter the residence. For all of you that are military or that have loved ones overseas now, I'm here for you. I am going to ask this panel here a question if they know about the Nasara case law. A 1993 Supreme Court case available to the world, $47 trillion, available to America to resurrect her, $10 trillion. Since 1993, Supreme Court case, brave generals like Mr. Sanchez, 30 years of service, sir. I salute you. Brave admirals, NORAD, our Pentagon people, our true heroes, went to the U.S. Supreme Court and made the justices rule according to the Constitution. You know what they ruled? Number one, the Federal Reserve is unconstitutional. Article 1, Section 8 of your Constitution says...
Sir, there is a related question to the DREAM Act here.
Okay. Yes, with $47 trillion for the world, $10 trillion for American, you have your jobs. We rebuild America. Everybody has money. We bring back our kids overseas because all wars cease immediately. Emergency War Powers Act is repealed. You have plenty of protection for the border.
Okay, what was the question?
Do you know about the Nasara case law?
I think you got me on that one. I'm going to have to do my research. So the question is, you want to apply that law to the DREAM Act?
Yes, with $10 trillion and no more wars. We create jobs for infrastructure, schools.
Okay.
Under the case law, every American receives millions.
Okay, I think you made us all go do some research.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
If you want to know about the Nasara law, if you'll give me your private email address, I'll email you some articles.
People can come up. Okay, thank you. After we're done, which is going to be shortly, people can come up and talk to the panelists. No problem. Sir, thank you for waiting.
Hi, thank you for letting me talk. My name is Philip or Felipe Salvatierra, and I taught school here at Memorial Cooper Jefferson High School, and I had the two great opportunities. One is a certified teacher for over 11 years, my magic number. And the great opportunity was that my students from Mexico were exemplary. They were just at the top of the class, the most greatest opportunity I had with them. Now the question goes to Mr. Schleider. Can I say your name? Would you say your name?
Skylar Christ.
I'm sorry, Skylar Christ. Skylar, I also had the opportunity to be at the Trade Center, the Windows of the World, 1 week before it was brought down to our national grief. Have you ever been to the Statue of Liberty in person yourself or to the Windows of the World before it came down? Did you ever have that opportunity?
I have seen the Statue of Liberty from a car window. As a matter of fact, in 2006, I was working in Pennsylvania for a little bit, and as a volunteer, and I had intended to go down there to see the Statue of Liberty. Unfortunately, we got there too late due to the Pennsylvania Turnpike traffic, But I did have a chance to at least see it fairly up close through my from the car.
That's wonderful. Was please, it please, an emotional?
Please tell me you're going to tie the Statue of Liberty to the Dream Act.
I sure am.
Okay.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. As you know, in that, and I'm sure that might have been an emotional moment for you. When the towers came down, are you aware that there was a lot of so-called illegal, undocumented workers in that building that came down and turned into vaporization? Are you aware of that? Does that, and if you are, does it bother you that the dust is still with us in this country?
Anytime human life is lost, that is a tragedy, whether you're illegal or not. But that doesn't change the fact of the Dream Act.
I understand that. They have no
bearing at all.
I see. I feel encouraged. Do you feel that it's a loss economically for us to have these people extracted and make them leave, and that the investment we've had thus far is now being bad money, good money after bad money is being thrown away by extracting these students from our country? How do you feel about that?
If they're here illegally, they're here illegally, and they need to make that things right. We can show mercy by allowing them the chance to come back, and we welcome people who are willing to do the right thing. That is one thing I will say in her defense. She has said that she is going through that process right now with her mother of becoming a legal citizen, getting the paperwork all in order. That is to be very commended.
How fast do you think these students should leave?
Last question.
How fast do you think they should be out? Immediately? Give them a couple of days or a week or a month or 10 years or 100 years?
As fast as we can.
What does that mean?
As fast as we can. That's up to the immigration services. That's up to the Department of Homeland Security. Those folks, they're the ones who can make that determination, and they can decide that. The fact of the matter is we did that.
No. That was your last one. We made a deal.
Don't speak over me.
Okay.
We did this in 1954. There was a man, president by the name of Herbert Hoover. We got rid of the illegals in that day. We did it then. We can do it under Obama if he had the fortitude. I'll put it that way. If he had the fortitude to do the right thing.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please. Thank you for waiting.
Hello, my name is Jonathan Bryan. I'm a teacher, a government teacher over at Kennedy High School. I just wanted to recognize all these Kennedy High School students that turned out. And I wanted to kind of follow up on what Chris said about as fast as you can. I just wanted to say, you know, as a teacher, it seems to me that if you had your way, Rodriguez, I'm sure you guys kind of think the same, that you would actually have teachers becoming sort of ICE agents, where we would report our undocumented students. And be aware, right, there's many students on the West Side that are undocumented. So if you had your way, would you not have teachers performing the duty of ICE agents, having students rounded up, deported? Sounds like what you said, sir, as fast as you can, to quote you.
Hold on. Let them answer that question. Skyler?
The fact of the matter is, if they're in that classroom illegally, then the school administration has a responsibility of reporting them. And they need to be reported. And under 287G, the San Antonio Police Department and every other local police department also has that authority and
obligation. So you would have students in this room deported?
Yes, I would. If they were illegal, you bet I would.
Okay, come on.
In a heartbeat.
Come, please, let's keep it down. George, you want to respond to that?
I can't. I mean, again, folks, if the person is here illegally and he's breaking the law, they've broken the law or they are breaking the law, what do you want us to say? You know what I would have? I would have you teach more balanced, conservative thoughts rather than just bringing folks that bring liberal ideals and placards here.
I mean, you could just say what you are, a Nazi.
Okay. Okay.
There's the hate. For that one, you get no more questions.
Please sit down.
Let me.
Let's keep it down, please. Let's keep it down. Okay. Let's keep it down. Before you say anything, you know, I just want to say, as a teacher, I think you have to be very careful about using those kind of names and accusations. That may not be the best example to set for students. Okay? Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Barbara Murray, and
I think actually Shyla Crist and George Rodriguez set the stage for inflammatory conversation. And I think it is unfortunate that Crist and Rodriguez have chosen to use insulting rhetoric. It's very much to me like Kristallnacht. I don't know if anyone here, I mean, history is not one of your big subjects in America.
Okay, come on, let's keep it down, please.
Okay, so let me go on. Okay, so
you have a question?
I do. Okay. Well, I have something I want to say. The IRS does not care whether people are here undocumented or not. They will issue individual identification numbers. So many immigrants who are here undocumented pay taxes. And it's, I mean, many pay taxes using this ITIN number. And it's a way, actually, for citizenship because they can prove that they've been tax-paying citizens.
Just okay, ma'am, please. Let her have her say, please, ma'am.
And then from a humanitarian perspective, I just think it's just, I mean, Americans should be afraid, ashamed of themselves for calling people illegal and just I don't, maybe, I just want to, okay.
Okay, let me hold on.
No, let me just finish. I want to say this. Okay, my question is, because immigrants come here for numerous reasons, for various countries, why isn't refugee status considered more frequently?
Okay, how is that tied to the DREAM Act?
Because
refugee status for DREAM Act students, is that what you're asking?
Well, not necessarily for the DREAM. I support the DREAM Act, but there are many people who come here from not just South America, but also from East and Western Europe who come here because of political duress. And so the panel here, I know Mr. Crist and Mr. Rodriguez, I really do believe this is a very racist issue for them because there are many people who come over from East and West Europe who also are undocumented, and I really haven't heard much of an argument towards that. I mean, you could look at me. You have no idea whether I'm a legal or an illegal immigrant per se. Okay, but it would never be a question in their mind.
Let them address that. George, do you want to address that?
I'm not sure what the question is, but first of all...
She was asking about making a distinction between people who are illegally from Mexico as opposed to all other countries.
Again, it's not an issue of race. It's an issue of legal status.
And keep your tone more moderate.
I'm sorry. I am talking to you naturally. This is how I talk. I'm sorry if you get offended.
I think it's obnoxious.
Well,
I think so much
don't
of
ask
what
a
you're
question.
Saying.
Okay. And I think you're obnoxious.
Okay.
Well, that's fine. Anyway,
can we
but
please keep it
okay,
civil?
Okay, I try to please. Keep. I want to ask a question here too.
Okay.
It seems to me that the
this
border.
This is the last one. There's people
okay,
waiting. Okay, ma'am.
Because of the people who are indigenous and native to this country, it seems that the border crossed them rather than them crossing the border. Okay. And the people here who are.
Well, the Indians had poor immigration laws, and look where it got them.
What a stupid answer. I'd expect no more from you.
Okay.
Hernan.
Okay.
Hernan.
Thank you, ma'am, for sharing.
Okay. Hernan.
Go ahead. General, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let me make just one very brief point.
Let's keep it quiet, please. Keep it quiet.
Let me just highlight
quiet,
one,
please.
One. Let me highlight an issue tied to the government teacher. He was talking about ICE agents in schools. I think this issue highlights one of the complexities and the problems within our federal laws. Because as I understand it, there is still a federal law in the books that has been there since the early 80s that requires our schools to accept any student that presents himself or themselves in our classrooms. So there's this dichotomy that we have here, this problem that we have here, because we have inconsistencies. On the one hand, we're saying they're undocumented or illegals, and on the other hand, we're saying whoever comes to school has to be provided an education. We have to fix this.
Plyler versus Doe, 1982. And again, I mean, the last place we want to have immigration officials is in our schools. It's absolutely, there's no benefit to gain if you have a kindergartner in class and he's being questioned by an immigration and customs enforcement officer about his status. There's nothing to gain. There's nothing to gain, and we have everything to lose.
Yeah, I'll
by
tell you.
Subjecting our children
I'll tell you
to
a,
that
a,
kind of action.
I'll tell you a personal story here, 30 seconds. I'm a brigadier general in Florida, going in to register my two kids who were born while I've been serving my country, and I'm asked for my passports before I can register my kids. That was not a good day for the superintendent when that happened. Okay? It was the typical stereotyping because I was a Hispanic and I spoke Spanish, and they were speaking to me in Spanish, and I responded to them in Spanish, which I could. And then the next thing they did is they put my son, who doesn't speak a lick of Spanish, in ESL for 3 weeks before he realized what was going on. We can't have that. That's part of the problem that America has right now, and we have to fix this.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. Again, thank you for waiting.
People like Mr. Rodriguez seem to be mainly concerned with the illegality of people who are living here. And without passing things like this is more a question for Mr. Sanchez, though. Without passing things like the DREAM Act, you have to go through approximately 15 years of legal bureaucracy and things like that. What kind of effort would it take to streamline that process to make it a more reasonable amount of time to let someone become a citizen?
A very concerted effort on the part of the interagency within the United States government and political will on the, from the level of the president through our political leadership in order to be able to get the right regulations and laws on the table.
Do you think that's possible?
I think it's very problematic for us. We have to make it possible. That is what every one of us in here, regardless of position that we're taking on this debate, that's what we ought to be demanding of our political leadership in Washington, is to solve this problem for us, because it's dividing our country and it isn't good for America and for the future of this great country of ours.
Okay. George. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, let me remind Mr. Sanchez and you that there was a supermajority in the House and in the Senate. And the president was Democrat for 2 years. And for 2 years, they didn't do anything about immigration reform. You know, so to say that there is will, political will from this administration or from liberal Democrats, is it really rings hollow in my ears.
No, I think you misunderstood me, George. I said there is no political will to solve the problem. That's what that's challenging our country. And we've got to come together to get to the right solution for the Americans have to come together. Independent of parties, we all have to come together, whether we're liberals, whether we're independents, whether we are Democrats, whether we're Tea Party members. This is about our country and it's about our future. That's why it's so critical for us to be able to solve this. And it's not a solution that's going to come from a single segment of the population. This is a total solution for the common good and the general welfare of the country.
Thank you, General. We only have a few minutes left. I know there's a long line here. Try to make it as quick as you can, and I may have to just cut it off, and then you can come up and ask the panelists individually. But go ahead pretty quickly, please.
I just wanted to make a statement. About 10 years ago, they passed a bill that allowed illegal aliens like Ms. Carissa Gonzalez or Canizales to pay in-state tuition, so that basically allowed her to be a student in the state and receive state funding. And they're having a the 10-year celebration this Sunday. So I think anybody who supports, the DREAM Act should at least go to support the House Bill 1403. Like I said, it passed 10 years ago, and they're having the celebration this weekend.
Okay, is there a question there, or are you just?
Yeah, I was also going to ask Ms. Canizales, realistically, we all know she can't have a job, so what are you going to do when you graduate?
Advocate for the DREAM Act to pass.
No. I said to support your family. What are you going to do when you graduate to make money?
There is only one thing. Like, I want, if the DREAM Act is passed and I can work, and that's the only way I'm going to be able to help my family.
Nothing. He's asking if it doesn't pass. What do you plan to do?
What are you going to do?
Advocate for it to pass.
It's
a constant fight. Like, we can't give up so soon. So therefore, we need to continue fighting for it to pass. In order for us to be able to help our families and whatnot.
Okay.
All right. Next, please, quickly.
Hi, my name is Miley. I'm from San Antonio, Texas. I have a question for Marisol and Carolina. My first question is two questions really quick. if you can briefly tell me how the DREAM Act and DREAM eligible students will benefit our economy.
There's the Congressional Budget Office actually before this last big wave in December talked about how we would be benefited financially. And basically, they said through taxes, through paying into our government system, their educational is also an investment in the United States, and job force. They will create jobs. They will sustain their jobs. They will be contributing positively. If you look, I mean, one thing I want to say, because we're going to be finishing here quickly, we're going to talk until we're blue in the face, and everybody's going to cite their statistics, and everybody's going to take their position. But I agree wholeheartedly with the general here that we really have to think about what's feasible, what's balanced, what are the good studies and statistics that are coming out that are neutral and have a very balanced, neutral approach. And we have to think about what's going to make sense for our country. And until we get away from all the rhetoric, which you know exists at the most extreme levels, we will never be able to agree about immigration reform. And I think everybody here wants it to happen, but comprehensively, fairly, and justly. And that's what we have to do. Otherwise, we're going to sit and talk for years on end.
Okay. Did you want to respond to that?
I was going to say also the workforce, military force, and or the economic by being able to pay taxes.
And secondly, for George Rodriguez, I know that the federally funded Secure Communities Program has deported over 1 million immigrants in the past under Obama. And in turn, it has also detained many Latino immigrants, immigrant-looking people, and especially DREAM Act-eligible students. And per night that's being held, it's $250 in taxpayer money that you pay to hold these immigrants for-profit private prisons. So does that not affect your family as well, and as well as DREAM Act-eligible students? And would you...
Okay, hold on. Let him answer that question, Miley. Okay, let's keep it down, please. You got
Look, young lady,
three more minutes.
Let me tell you.
Let him answer the question.
There you go.
Okay.
Welcome to the liberals.
Okay. Let him please answer the question.
Okay. When the immaturity is lowered, we can talk.
We can talk when your immaturity is down too.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
But then also,
okay, hold on,
are you going to hear me or not?
Hold on,
I'm not.
Are you
going
to listen?
Question.
Are you going to listen to my answer?
I will when I finish my question.
No. Okay, hold on, Miley. You asked him a question. Okay. Let's keep it down. You asked him the question about whether it's worth the incarceration costs of illegal immigrants. George, is it worth it?
Immigrants. You said word immigrants. You didn't say illegals. Yes, if they're illegal, yes, it's worth it.
They're human beings. They are detained for low-level offenses. And so are your family members who are immigrant-looking, people of color?
I am not afraid of racial profiling. I am a citizen. I can prove it. I am not afraid of it.
And so you don't support a piece of legislation that will benefit our economy?
I am not afraid of it.
Because these four private prisons are reaping our economy, and you're allowing that to happen.
I'm not afraid of it. I'm sorry.
That's my question. Thank you.
Okay. I am... Thank you. Okay. I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut it off there. We're really short on time. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for staying, mostly in a civil manner. It's a very emotional and very passionate subject, as everybody can tell. Feel free to come up and talk if you want to do it in a civil manner to the panelists. Thank you again so much for coming.